well, but he's very talented, and he has his guitar again with us this week to provide songs that he has written to help elaborate an understanding of the subject. And last week when we broke Dolph, we were discussing the problems that occurred after 1964 when the communist cadres that had been sent into South Vietnam out of the North had been virtually exhausted, and they made the decision to send troops from North Vietnam into the South. And then something radical happened in the Vietnam conflict. There was the massive commitment of American combat troops. And I think we might just pick up from that point because after this assumption in 1965 that the United States had to intervene so massively in the defense of South Vietnam, we have since come to the conclusion 5 years later, or 6 years later, that we can turn the responsibilities back to the South under the President's Vietnamization program. And what is the basis for making that decision when 5 or 6 years ago we concluded they couldn't make it on their own?
I think, Congressman Crane, that the first thing is that the North Vietnamese figured we would do nothing. They figured they could get away with wrapping up the war fast. So their view of putting troops in would be many times in the past, four times since 1946, in communist-to-communist terms, the northern faction in the Communist Party in Hanoi sold out the southern communist interests. The French returned in 1946 by the signature of Ho Chi Minh. Geneva Conference was a trade-off with the South having to wait 2 years. And one would ask, why? Ho won the war. Why did he lose the peace? Well, we didn't sign, and South Vietnam didn't sign, so it wasn't our role. It was Ho Chi Minh saying to his Moscow friends, yes, I'll give the French 2 years. It'll be a trade-off that Moscow had asked for because of the European Defense Community Bill in the French Parliament. It was a very complicated thing with Moscow priorities for Western Europe's defenses as the major priority. And then, again, in 1956, no elections. France left. North Vietnam had a rebellion against its regime. So that hawk in Hanoi had a good case in 64. You can't sell out the Southern movement again. Send in the army this time. Wrap it up. Then we, the inscrutable American, as the North Vietnamese would say, we responded. For 7 years, we'd used advisors. Advisors were sort of like ants floating downstream on a log, each one under the illusion he was steering. You know, they had no power, no control. They simply advised. Vietnamese who took their advice in many cases were killed by the communists, politically executed. Then when you came to this larger role of 17,000 American advisors, only 14,000 of them were living in the city. So 3,000 lived where the problem was in the countryside. And this gets down to the fact that the communists were in the villages and we were not. So in a way, America was there a long time, but in a way, America was hardly there at all. And that's where we lost those years. And those were those lost opportunities and lost moments for leverage and for perhaps stemming the tide of the political deterioration. So when the North Vietnamese put their army in, it was very clear that we had only one real choice. Do you want South Vietnam to go down? You're going to let it collapse, or you're going to do something to save it. So I really think the decision of 1965 to send troops was courageous, and I think it was correct. On the other hand, having sent the troops, we Americans do a certain thing. It's our own psychology. We take over problems. And the Vietnamese were standing up saying, I've been in the semifinals a long time. That's the way they looked at this indeterminate period. Don't get killed in the semifinals, a good Taoist would say. The yin and the yang are out of harmony. This is a bad time. Don't do a thing. 1957 to 1964. Suddenly in 1965, the Americans are here. The bombs are falling on North Vietnam. The American troops are in South Vietnam. They save South Vietnam. Southerner stands up and says, I think maybe I'm not going to lose. And the American says, would you move out of my way, please? This is my war. Well, that starts the process. We build bases in 66. In 67, we set out to win. But I think even there, it's wise to consider that at that moment, the South Vietnamese had already moved through political turmoil and what we'd call chaos in the streets. They had moved, because of protests by the Buddhists, to forming a new constitution. And the Constitution said village elections. And the village elections had not existed since 1956. And once they were back in, 1,000 villages voted, despite the Viet Cong threat. Now that made for the Viet Cong a new problem on the priority list of how do you keep South Vietnam from politicking without you. And the North Vietnamese would say right away, we can't let the South develop politically while the Americans are defeating us on the battlefield. About 30 to 40% of this war is military. 60% of the war is political. It's Vietnamese. An American can win on the battlefield, but he can't be Vietnamese. So the North would know that it was more dangerous to see village elections in South Vietnam than it would be to see American troops on the battlefield, because these Vietnamese were organizing in their own society. Then you came to the moment when they had national elections following village elections. That would be the summer of 1967. Then it was the fall of 1967, the autumn. And then the new government was in. From that moment, the Tet attacks were preordained because General Ziap was going to then crush the central nervous system and the brain, if you will, of the Saigon and South Vietnam government apparatus. His view would be, you destroy this because the villages are now growing with their own councils elected by their own leaders. That's deadly. Now we have to move in and kill at the top the willingness of the Vietnamese to form this kind of government. And so they attacked every city. And they also thought 1968 is an election year. It's the only year in a presidential election year in the United States you can get a kind of a replay of the French falling after Dien Bien Phu. The idea that cabinets fall in France and there's a crisis of confidence. In America, every 4 years, the amateurs elect the professionals. And that's a system that I think is the best in the world. But it does allow the vulnerability that in that year, all the pressures are focused, and anyone who wants to get the United States to change does it that year. So the Tet attacks were to crush us just as well as Saigon. Well, it was very interesting to see then that they put all these resources in, they attack 43 cities, they don't hold any city except in Hue for 26 days, and there they carry out their political program.
Yes, their political program is one that is too frequently and conveniently shoved into the background of the American consciousness because, and I know that there's a song that you have dealing with their program in a way.
Yes, the North Vietnamese occupied the city with their troops, but the local Viet Cong are the ones who, in fact, then surfaced in the city and carried out their political program. The first killings they carried out were political executions by kangaroo court in public. These were the people who served the government, and they said, you have taken the wrong side, you see, and we kill you. Then they asked for members of social units to attend orientation courses. This was social units. These were social units like women's organizations, students' organizations. They had the pro-communist students in one organization from the University of Hue included in the social unit. And they took these social units and their members to the edge of the city and murdered them, shot them in the back of the head, strangled them with cords, or buried them alive because they stood in the way of a new society, because they were not the disciplined elite of the conspiratorial group like the Lao Dong Party, you see. And then, of course, the last killings, when they lost the city, were the eyewitnesses. They killed those who had seen the first two waves of killings. Now, that was about 5,700 people killed. This brought the Vietnamese, both in Hue and in other parts of the country, to that consciousness of, you've got to take a role here. There's no fence left to sit on because the communists are absolutely implacable in this carrying out of a program. We charged the communists with an atrocity. We said, you know, that was an atrocity in Hue. And they broadcast back in the open from Radio Hanoi. In their broadcast, they said, we were charged with an atrocity. That is ridiculous. Our southern forces collected blood debts. They collected blood debts. That's a policy. Well, Vietnamese had a reaction to that. And it's very interesting to note that there was a very small amount of protest around the world, whether in this country or elsewhere, concerning the atrocity of the Hue massacre. And it makes you think that a lot of people have one-eyed morality. They're outraged at certain things, and so am I, where our side has erred, or those we support have erred. But also, when you have a policy, as opposed to an aberration, then I think there is some reason for real protest of a policy, and that policy was the communist policy of eliminating people in Hue. So I wrote a song called Voices of the Dead. In the city of Hue, in South Vietnam, the men of Ho Chi Minh came to call. They occupied that city for 3 long weeks that year, and put 5,000 people against the wall. For the sake of the future, hear the voices of the dead. Strangulation, live burial, or a bullet in the head. And remember, if now you cut and run, then the future will be written by the executioner's gun. They killed school teachers and politicians too. They killed intellectuals and lots of folks like you. They killed those with whom in peace they might compete. They killed from a list and the list it was complete. For the sake of the future, hear the voices of the dead. Strangulation, live burial, or a bullet in the head. And remember, dear neighbor, if now you turn and run, the future will be written by the executioner's gun. In the city of Hue in South Vietnam, the men of Ho Chi Minh came to call. They occupied that city for 3 long weeks that year and put 5,000 people against the wall. For the sake of the future, hear the voices of the dead, the voices of the dead, the voices of the dead.
That's a very moving song, and I think it's particularly poignant because, as I indicated, people have so frequently overlooked in this country the fact that that is policy, conscious policy.
I think also the implication of what does a coalition mean? Now, a coalition the Vietnamese choose is one thing, but a coalition imposed as the National Liberation Front insists upon is another. And Hanoi and the National Liberation Front say impose a coalition and that's a reasonable settlement. Well, for Vietnamese with that experience, with that closeness to the Hue tragedy, I'm sure they would have long, long thoughts about anything they could not themselves really choose in all the elements. The NLF says, well, we want one-third communists. And then we want one-third of the Saigon government people who can join, who are not, or who are for independence, peace, and neutrality. And then they want one-third of the non-Saigon government people who are for independence, peace, and neutrality. The only hooker is that only the NLF can tell you who really is for peace, independence, and neutrality, they say. And so what you have is a one-third communist and a veto power over the other two-thirds. Now, that's really not very democratic, reasonable, or a path that would end a war in a way that would preserve the diversity of the Vietnamese. You know, that's 2 million Catholics and 2 million Hoa Hao, who are an offshoot of the Buddhists, and 2 million Cao Dai, who are a very, very important religious sect in Vietnam, and 800,000 mountain tribes, who are 30 different tribes, really, and 30% of the country who are Buddhist. So what Tet did with that attack was really to put Vietnam in the resolve that there was no way to avoid a commitment, that now it was their stake and their future. And so perhaps, as ironically, the communists gave the best indoctrination to the Vietnamese as to why they should take a role in Vietnamization, because it was their future and their neck at stake. On the other hand, in America, the trauma of Tet caused many things to happen. The President of the United States, of course, did not run again to succeed himself as a candidate in the Democratic Party. There was the convention in Chicago, the Democratic National Convention, and that in your backyard, and that was certainly a tumultuous time. And then there was the election. And if Hanoi had been betting that this would break the United States in terms of its policy, in the record of 2,500 years of seeing all opponents of Vietnam quit because of home priorities, in comes President Nixon and says, my program is Vietnamization and negotiation. Now, that's very different then. That says I'm going to give the Southerner time and training and equipment to support his own view, and his own view is he doesn't want to be ruled by the North. That's infinitely more dangerous to a Northern communist design or goal than an American who will go home, who is far from his land, who does have other priorities. So the president is really saying to the North, if you want to negotiate, fine, we'll all get out faster. We'll have an Indochina ceasefire, an Indochina peace conference, a mutual withdrawal of the alien troops. North Vietnamese alien, alien to the South, American alien, certainly alien to South Vietnam. And they'll go home. And they'll go home on a verifiable timetable, total withdrawal, but mutual. And we'll have an exchange of all prisoners of war now. And we'll have a settlement of the South with all political forces in the South represented fairly. So the Viet Cong can come in and run. And this is the rub, you see. The Communists could wait through 1969 to get over Tet because it crippled them. And 1,000 more villages voted in South Vietnam as a result. So 2,000 were then participating out of 2,300 that existed in the country. Then in 70, the Communists in 1970 could plan on attacking out of Cambodian sanctuaries and destroying Vietnamization. Then the Cambodian decisions, both of the South Vietnamese and of President Nixon, resulted in the destruction of those sanctuaries. And so there were no attacks on Vietnamization in 1970. Then 1971, they're getting ready. Why? Because 1971 is a South Vietnamese election year, and North Vietnam is getting ready to try to crush those elections. But while they're doing it, the Laos operation is launched. And the Vietnamese go in on the ground, showing somewhat of the improvement that the South Vietnamese forces have registered. 4 years ago, some said they couldn't pull up their socks. In 1970, they're helping in the Cambodian operation. In 1971, they're conducting for 40 days the operation in Laos. Some people said they didn't stay long enough. 40 days in the palm of the hand of the enemy is a long time. American units in South Vietnam have never stayed longer than 18 days in combat without rotation and relief throughout the war. 40 days is a long time to sit in the palm of the hand of the enemy with anti-aircraft in his favor, with the terrain he knows intimately, and then come out and not come out losing your total army. What they had were 4 battalions that didn't perform well and 18 that performed very well. Well, that can't show North Vietnam time is on the side of the North. That shows Vietnamization is growing. And so the president repeats again, negotiate. It's there at Paris. You want us out faster? Then negotiate. But every time Hanoi looks at this country, it has to decide who speaks for America. Is it the dove? Is it the hawk? Or is it the owl? And now we're in a period where the dove's voice is heard very loudly. And I would say that at this time then, the hawk in Hanoi has more leverage, and the dove, the communist dove in Hanoi, has less leverage to say. Their role in the debate would be to convince one party, one faction, or the other, of some change of policy. In North Vietnam, they've lost 700,000 young men in the war, in the South. They never told their people they were going until 1968. They told their people that we were invading North Vietnam. That was what the bombing was about. The bombing ended. The people said, fine, we've defeated D-Day. America is not going to come to invade us now. Where's my son? And then, interestingly enough, rather than say, oh, we'll tell you later, someone decided to send the wounded home to North Vietnam, the blind, the crippled, the amputee. The hippies now exist in North Vietnamese society. The mother on the stage in a North Vietnamese drama saying, why should I send my son south? So many have gone, so few have returned. In other words, the pressures are there in their society for the domestic priorities, and it does turn out to be the Vietnamese pattern of 2,500 years. Hanoi may quit, or Washington may quit, or Saigon may quit. That may be the end of the war, but Hanoi is included in the possibility of changing its policy. And so, today, the Vietnamese would say in the South, we're getting ready. Now train us, give us time. You didn't pay any attention to us for years. You fought the war as your own. Well, we Vietnamese know that it's our own country and our own struggle, and we have to then have the training, the time. 500,000 guns have been given to farmers today, too old, too young for the draft, in South Vietnam. They defend their village with them in a self-defense force, but they also remember how to put the cartridge in the chamber to collect on unfulfilled government promises in the future. That's very interesting for the government in Saigon to do that.
Now, this is a particularly interesting point in light of some of the allegations of how tyrannical is the regime in Saigon, and if it were that tyrannical, they wouldn't dare put arms in the hands of so many people that could be turned back on the government itself.
That
by contrast, look at the North.
Yes, the North has no candidates in jail because the North has no candidates. I mean, it's a very different situation. But I would say this. In South Vietnam, there have been people jailed. There have been actions that I would not call in the best interest of South Vietnam taken by the South Vietnamese themselves. However, this is a war. It's a long one. It's been going on for them more than 13 years. And it's a backyard war. And at that time, there are stresses. Abraham Lincoln killed 1,000 people in the streets of New York with cannon during the draft protests in the Civil War in the United States.
And jailed many political opponents.
Right. But I would say this about how repressive South Vietnam is. The Buddhists who opposed the policy of the president of South Vietnam ran and contested for the Senate seats in 1970 and won the first slate of 10 seats in the Senate. Now, you can't have it both ways. Either the government is totally repressive, doesn't allow any opposition, or a government has a willingness to have a constitutional process under which opposition is permitted, but certain things are ruled out. Namely, the man that was jailed who ran for the presidency was jailed not for running and not for polling 17% of the votes, but in 1967, he ran, and in 68, he proposed coalition government, right after the Tet attacks, right after that terrible time of 43 cities being struck by the enemy. Well, now that's a little touchy moment to mention coalition government, and especially when you talk about imposed, you see. But the Buddhists won in 1970 in September. The communists said these elections were a fraud. The Buddhists said they were the fairest elections they'd ever been in. Now, that's the pressure on North Vietnam today in 1971. 1,000 villages vote this summer, starting in May, every summer, every Sunday in the summer. Then the lower house is chosen, and then the presidency and vice presidency in October, lower house in August. Now, you know, those elections are important for Vietnamese. What if the Viet Cong don't take up President Chu's offer to come in and run and sit on the Election Arrangements Committee and help with international supervision? Well, if the countryside votes without the Viet Cong more and more appear to be a political anachronism in their own backyard, and that's bad for their movement, they believe. So they want us to name a date, and that means there will be no elections. June 30th, 1971 is a date Madam Binh, the head of the NLF delegation in Paris, offered to us. That merely says, give us a date that'll tell the Vietnamese you're going home by that date, and they won't want to incriminate themselves by taking part in a process which is going to have them against the wall in a repeat of the Hue massacre when the communists take over. You see? That's this element again of the yin and the yang, of the survival of the man through the semifinals. The communists are in the semifinals now. Their forces defect out of the Viet Cong. 157,000 come out to seek a bleacher seat and sit in it and look to see what's going to happen. But on the other hand, if you set a date, you tell the South Vietnamese, I see the semifinals coming. And the South Vietnamese then have to get uncommitted, unconnected, unstigmatized, if you will. That's what they have to worry about, and we sometimes don't see it. We think a date is very reasonable. So this is a song I wrote about Vietnamization. I think it would sum it up. In America, now this is a Vietnamese singing, not an American. In America, they speak of Vietnamization. A word that means an awful lot to me. It means that I must carry my own burden and meet my own responsibility. Put it on my shoulder, I'm Vietnamese. Vietnamization is how it ought to be. See, the man is not mediocre anymore, and he was never incompetent, so he can take a role. In 1965, you Yanks were needed, responding to the troops sent by Hanoi. By 1968, Ho'd been defeated and attacked our cities at Tet in a desperate ploy. Our army stood and fought, so did our people. And then at last our cities were swept clean. But in America, you felt you'd been defeated. Ho's attack almost got the mimeograph machine. Put it on my shoulder, I'm Vietnamese. Vietnamization means a lot to me. LBJ retired to the prairie, far from the Chicago strife-torn political scene. And a feller named Richard Milhouse Nixon for Christmas gave me an M16. Put it on my shoulder, I'm Vietnamese. Vietnamization, it means a lot to me. America, if you will go home slowly, train me as you go, then we shall see if I can meet the challenge of the future, developing in peace and staying free. So a Vietnamese says, pay no attention to the dove. Give me all that training time you see, and go home just like porcupines make love. Very
very, very, very carefully. Put it on my shoulder. I'm Vietnamese. Vietnamization, it means a lot to me. It's how it ought to be. It means I'm free.
Dolph, tragically, we're running out of time here, and before we do, and in the event that time runs short on us in the process, there's one final subject that we haven't touched upon, and that has to do with the plight of American POWs, and you have a very, very excellent song on that subject. Would you sing that? And in the event we run out of time, I'll conclude and say goodnight to you all now, and thank you, Dolph, for being on the program.
Thank you very much, Congressman Crane. This is a song that is designed to call attention to our men, because there are government policies saying we care, but there is no book, no song, no movie, no poem, no play, no drama in this country that says we care, so I've written one. It says we care, and it says we care not that these men are just being mistreated by our standards of Western behavior, but they've been being mistreated in violation of 2,500 years of Vietnamese culture and tradition. So the communists are really out of step in Hanoi, and we should call their attention to it. I symbolize all our men, airmen, soldiers, sailors, Marines, as eagles in those prison camps, North, South Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, held by the communists. Don't forget the eagles who served our country well, but they are wasting now for months and years in a dark and lonely cell. Don't forget these men whom you so proudly knew, for they are your loved ones, your fathers and your brothers too. Can Hanoi have so little value for a human life? Why won't they even answer? Are you a widow? Men who once so bravely flew. Don't forget the eagles, their life depends on you. Don't forget the eagles, now shackled night and day. No letter from home, no friendly voice, 10,000 miles away. Don't forget these men whom you so proudly knew, for they are our loved ones, our fathers and our brothers too. Now hawk and dove, we all must speak, if they let our people go. Don't forsake these men who once so bravely flew. Don't forget the eagles, their life depends on you. And if we 200